It is time for us to begin a new week of studies in the Warren County Radio Bible School, and we began a special feature last Monday where instead of turning to Elam's notes for our Sunday school lesson, we would pause in our studies, and I would bring to you the articles that appear in the bulletin of the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. And this Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. And so I think it's fitting to bring you these bulletin articles. And as I've said last Monday, these are essentially the sermons that I bring from the pulpit. When you come to visit us at Rock Cliff, you'll be handed a bulletin on Sunday morning, and there you will see something like this written, and that is essentially the sermon that you are about to hear. And that way you get to not only read the sermon, but you get to take notes of it or parts of it home with you. Now, this is not the entire sermon, but somewhat of a summary and a preview of what is to come. And in this particular bulletin, I had written about Abraham's living hope. And here's how the bulletin article reads. Abraham lives. Jesus said, "Have ye not read that which was spoken unto you by God, saying, I am the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob? God is not the God of the dead, but the God of the living." Matthew 22:31-32. In telling the story of Lazarus, Jesus said, "The beggar died and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom." Luke 16:22. I have heard many fanciful explanations of Abraham's bosom, but the simplest is that Lazarus was in Abraham's embrace. The living Lazarus found Abraham alive, and the living Abraham spoke with the living rich man who was across the great gulf living in torments. Jesus said, "Of the everlasting kingdom, that many shall come from the east and the west and shall sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven." Matthew 8:11. Abraham's body of flesh has long turned back to the dust, but Abraham's spirit lives. We wonder, what was Abraham's hope while he lived in the flesh? We know that Christ hath brought life and immortality to light through the gospel, 2 Timothy 1:10. And we know that by the resurrection of Christ, we have an assurance of things hoped for, Hebrews 11:1, that Abraham did not have. But with some study, we can uncover some of the hope that the patriarchs had in the old dispensation. The patriarchs believed that the spirit lived on after departing from the body. Genesis 25:8 says, "Then Abraham gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people." He was not taken back to Haran to be buried with Terah, his father, or back to Ur to be buried with his forefather. He was not talking about the placement of his body of flesh, but the abode of his spirit. It is said of Ishmael, "He gave up the ghost and died and was gathered to his people." Genesis 25:17. Genesis 39:29 says, "Isaac gave up the ghost and died and was gathered unto his people." It is said of Jacob, "He gathered up his feet into his bed and yielded up the ghost and was gathered to his people." Genesis 49:33. Joseph's brothers sold Joseph into slavery and put the blood on Joseph's coat so that his father would think Joseph was dead. When this was presented to his father, Jacob said, "It is my son's coat. An evil beast hath devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces." He refused to be comforted, and he said, "For I will go down into the grave unto my son mourning." Genesis 37:33-35. Well, that's the King James Version. The translators rendered the word Sheol as grave. But Sheol is more than a grave. Look at the text. Jacob did not believe Joseph was in a grave. He thought Joseph's body of flesh was in the belly of a beast. Jacob was not talking about the placement of his body in a grave beside Joseph. He was talking of his spirit departing to Sheol. There he would meet with the spirit of his son. Jacob said, "I will go into Sheol with my son." Abraham believed in the resurrection of the dead. We did not learn this from Genesis, but Hebrews 11:17-19 says, "By faith Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, that in Isaac shall thy seed be called, accounting that God was able to raise up him even from the dead, from whence he also received him in a figure." Abraham believed in a better and heavenly country. It is written of the patriarchs, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from which they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city." Hebrews 11:13-16. Without the knowledge of the resurrection of Jesus from the dead, Abraham had great faith and great hope. With all we now know, we should have greater faith and greater hope. 1 Peter 1:13 says that God has begotten us again unto a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, and that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you. Now, after reading that, if you had come to the Church of Christ at Rockcliffe, we would sing a few songs and have some prayers, and then I would get to the pulpit, and I would preach that very lesson, not always exactly as it is written, because I don't read my sermons off, but the substance of that lesson would appear in my preaching, and then you could take that lesson home with your bulletin that I have just read. Now, you come see us when you can, and visit and see how we do this. The Church of Christ at Rockcliffe is the building, the meeting house, is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m., and all are welcome to all of our assemblies. Now, having completed that special feature, I'm going to return to the normal Bible class that we have, or the regular Bible studies that we have in this Bible school, and we're looking at a Sunday school lesson that was written by E.A. Elam for the Sunday of February 24th, 1924, on the period of the Judges. There are two books in the Old Testament that specifically cover this period. That is the book of Judges and the book of Ruth. And then there's some at the beginning of the book of 1 Samuel. And we're particularly looking at Judges 2, verses 16 through 18, and Judges 7, verses 2 through 8. The golden text for this Sunday school lesson, though, is found in the book of Hosea. Hosea chapter 14 and verse 4, where God says, "I will heal their backsliding. I will love them freely, for mine anger is turned away from him." The devotional reading for this lesson is the 32nd Psalm. The inscription to this psalm calls it a Psalm of David, with this strange little word, maskil. And it is thought that that word means that this is a psalm of instruction. Let me read to you the 32nd Psalm and see if you can receive the instruction. Psalm 32 and verse 1 says, "Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man unto whom Jehovah imputeth not iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no guile. When I kept silence, my bones wasted away through my groaning all the day long, for night and day thy hand was heavy upon me. My moisture was changed as with the drought of summer, Selah. I acknowledged my sin unto thee, and mine iniquity did I not hide. I said, I will confess my transgressions unto Jehovah, and thou forgavest the iniquity of my sin, Selah. For this let every one that is godly pray unto thee, in a time when thou mayest be found. Surely when the great waters overflow, they shall not reach unto him. Thou art my hiding place. Thou wilt preserve me from trouble. Thou wilt compass me about with songs of deliverance, Selah. I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will counsel thee with mine eye upon thee. Be not as the horse or as the mule, which have no understanding, whose trappings must be bit and bridled to hold them in. Else they will not come near unto thee. Many sorrows shall be to the wicked. But he that trusteth in Jehovah, loving kindness shall compass him about. Be glad in Jehovah, and rejoice, ye righteous, and shout for joy, all ye that are upright in heart." Now, we're going to talk about some geographical notes for this lesson. We're going to read about a place called Bochim. It was probably near Shiloh. The word Bochim means weepers, because there the people wept at what the angel said. And then we're going to talk about the place of Gideon's battle. Encouraged by the miracles of the previous chapter, Gideon and all the people that were with him rose up early and encamped beside the spring of Harod, and the camp of Midian was on the north side of them, by the hill of Moreh in the valley, by far the most important of the inland plains is Esdraelon. In shape, it is irregular triangle, bound on the north by the Galilean hills, on the east by the hill of Moreh and the mountains of Gilboa, and on the south and west by the hills of Samaria and the range of Carmel. This triangular plain is said to be about 14 miles on the north, about 18 miles on the east, and about 20 miles on the southwest. From this plain go out three arms or valleys, one to the northeast between the hills of Nazareth and Moreh, another running westward unto the Jordan Valley between the hill of Moreh and Mount Gilboa, and the third stretching southward toward Enganim. The middle arm is, in the strictest sense of the term, the ancient valley of Jezreel, the town from which it took its name, standing at the northwestern end of Mount Gilboa. The hill of Moreh was north, and Mount Gilboa south of the valley of Jezreel. This plain has been called the great battlefield of Palestine. King Saul fought his last battle on Mount Gilboa, and in this plain King Josiah was slain. 2 Kings chapter 23 and verse 20 says, "In his days Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, went up against the king of Assyria to the river Euphrates, and King Josiah went against him. And Pharaoh Necho slew him at Megiddo when he had seen him." Those who have traveled in Palestine tell us that the eastern end of Esdraelon was at the foot of Mount Gilboa. On the north, near its western end, it burst forth a spring flowing east down the valley of Jezreel, in a valley about 15 feet wide and 2 feet deep. We'll continue next class.